Okay, this is about the fourth time I've tried to start the show. I'm going to try to start it once again, see how this works out. It is the news, according to me. Well, here we are. We are starting the show here. I have, let's just start with this. It's Fabulous Financial Friday, May 22nd, the 22nd of May. It's 2:22 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am in the nation's capital of Washington, D.C. this morning. I have, or this afternoon, I guess it is now. I have, the show is running a little late. I've been working since about 5 o'clock this morning. I have rested here in the DC area. I'll be here till tomorrow afternoon. Actually, I totally forgot this is Memorial Day weekend here, and here I am in the Capitol. It is a hustling, bustling place, even though it's raining. I was hoping to get downtown or get down to the mall and the White House Mall, the Capitol area, and get a picture, a couple selfies of me near the reflection pool, which is, you know, of course, I think it's done now. I guess it's much, much nicer looking than it used to be. So we'll see what happens with all this. I don't know. I'm going to try to get down there, hopefully get down there before it gets too dark. It's you know, 3 o'clock, and almost 3 o'clock in the afternoon by the time I get out of here with the show, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to take me about an hour. It's about 4 miles from here to where the mall is. I'm planning on walking that distance, so I don't know. We'll see how it works out. But actually, it might be closer to 5 miles, which is fine. I need the exercise. I'm going to be definitely doing that. It's a little bit cool here, cool and rainy, so that's the biggest problem. We'll see how that goes. I really need a nap. But I've got my cup of chai here beside me, and I also have the it's almost too hot to drink right now. I got a lukewarm, lukewarm cup of sweet tea from Chick-fil-A, as well as a little bit of a mixture of my own peach tea in there as well. Not much peach flavor left in that, but it's mostly just stuff. I had breakfast this morning at Chick-fil-A, so I've got a little bit of that in there. I have a few things to talk about. We'll get into it. It is Financial Friday. Some interesting things with the chatbot this morning. I think we're going to have to see how this works out for us. We have the chatbot decided this morning how it's going to operate. It basically came up with the show prep for today based on the Financial Friday idea, and it made all the questions for the call in the bot callers, the AI callers that call into the show. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to push the button and see what happens with these characters and see what kind of question. I have no idea what the questions are. Everything was set up for me. It's almost like it's a real world. Only I don't even have a call screener. I don't even have any idea what they're calling in about, other than it's supposed to be related to the Financial Friday theme. So we'll see what happens with that. See what kind of a job they do with that. And of course, that's about all I've got with that. Other than that, that's about all there is. You got what's in my cup. You got that. I think it's time for just some bumper music. I think that's what we're going to do now. We're going to take a little break and see if I can cool off my chai so I can drink it.
It's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
Yeah, according to me,
it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me,
it's the news.
Yeah, it's the news. According to me.
Oh, yes, here we are. It is Friday, Fabulous Financial Friday. Shabbat Shalom to everyone. It's that time of the week where we come to the conclusion of everything and we actually talk a little bit about finance. Now, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a financial counselor. In fact, I'm going to have to make a song. I'm going to make a little bumper song about that. Well, we'll just do it. We'll do a fun, some kind of a fun song with that one. I have quite a few things to get into today. The biggest thing is the caller thing. We're gonna see if this caller thing even works. Right now, it's still being tested natively on my computer here, and we're gonna try to. At some point, we will have the ability to call. We'll actually be able to get online. It's gonna be a live thing that will be able to be worked on. I wish I could work on it remotely. There's got to be a way to do it. I know that Claude is working on those kinds of things to make it happen better and better. I'm still not sure exactly how to do that. I've got co-work. I've got all that stuff that comes with Claude to build the app. I've got to figure out how to host it on Amazon Web Services. I guess I got to figure out that part of things. It's kind of a larger puzzle of things that have to be done. See how that works out. In the meantime, I am working on this whole thing with the color. But I think I'm just going to jump right into it. This is there's some news. There is some news. Of course, happy Memorial Day to all of you, and appreciate all of you who have served and who have given. You know, you are willing to give all, and for those who have sacrificed everything. I can't thank you personally, but I do thank and appreciate your families and everything that has been given up for the service of our country. I do appreciate that. I know the nation. Just know that there is a large sector of the population that is grateful for that. There are a lot of ungrateful people. Let's just say there's a lot of people who don't like this country. They don't like anything about it. They don't like the way it's founded. They don't appreciate Memorial Day. Chuck Schumer, maybe he'll come out and put some raw hamburgers on the grill and put some cheese on them. Take a photo op of himself again this year, like he did last year. I think it was last year, the year before. What a ridiculous! It just so many ridiculous things with this leftist party. There's anyway. We'll see how it works out for them in the next election, I guess. In the meantime, I think we're just going to do this with. I got to make sure the volume is up on this thing. Volume is up. It should be loud enough. We got Chloe is at the top of the list here. Let's see what Chloe has to say. We're just going to start right in. I have no idea what these guys are going to call what they're going to talk about. We'll see what happens here. This thing usually processes things pretty fast.
Hey there, Kevin, big brain.
Yes.
So I read that ground beef is over $7 a pound now. $7.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I just keep thinking, like, am I budgeting wrong, or is everyone else secretly panicking too? You know, groceries are getting kind of scary.
Scary. Yeah, yes, scary is the word. That is the word. Now, it's a good question. I had no idea ground beef. That's basically hamburger. I think you're talking about hamburger. That's what I understand ground beef is. The $7 a pound seems a little pricey to me when you can get a quarter pounder for $7. I guess that's not so bad. Interesting. That's very interesting. I haven't heard of that. The ground beef prices were that high. Doesn't surprise me. Most ground beef is transported and everything through, you know, via trucks, so they have to pay for the fuel. Diesel fuel is. I noticed that the price of gas came down exponentially here in the last few days. I'm not sure what happened there. I've heard some things about the market, and I don't know what to believe here. There's some things saying that the market's going up, some things saying the market's coming down. A lot of conflicting information about what's going on with the market right now. I've looked at my own accounts. I don't see any real big changes there, but that's kind of the – I don't know. I'm not sure about that, all that. Now, as far as the hamburger thing – yeah, of course. Now you live. I think you live on the West Coast. The price in our area is not usually as high. I think it's usually 25 to 30% less than it is in the California area for food prices. I know food prices in general. Which, of course, again, like I said, food is just it gets transported, and anything that gets transported on something that burns fuel is going to cost more right now. There's no shortages, nothing like that that's happening. No blights. No famine. It's just the price of transportation that's added into all this that's causing most of the problems. So it's in processing and that kind of thing as well. But That's my understanding. Now, what is your, you know, I don't know what the range is. Maybe you can find out what the range of the prices are for ground beef throughout the country. I personally, I think this thing is going to be straightened out. The pricing, the prices of things. Again, you're always going to get transient prices of things that pop up and pop down, and of course the left makes it. You know, if it's the price of eggs or the price of prunes, whatever it is, it's up. Bro, prunes cost, you know, twice as much as they did. Well, okay, whatever. Gasoline prices and you know, things like staples like beef and milk and cheese and those kinds of things, they have to get in line. I think they will very shortly. I think that we're right around the corner, probably within the next week or two, of having prices back in line, and this is all going to be behind us, and then people are going to forget about it by November, which is the time of the election. So we'll see how that works. But in the meantime, that's kind of my opinion. I don't know. Let's see how the AI responds to that. Let's see what goes on with there. Go ahead.
Okay, so real talk, $7 a pound for ground beef is literally insane. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's giving inflation era. But like, I'm seeing everyone on TikTok complaining about grocery prices right now, and it's kind of the main character moment for broke people everywhere. I'm not trying to be political or whatever, but the fact that we're all just supposed to forget about this by November, when people are literally choosing between eating and paying rent, is wild to me. No cap.
No cap, yeah. Well, it is, but, I realize that people, you know, you wouldn't think that people would forget these kinds of things, but they do. It's amazing to me. The short memory that people have in this country. If things are straightened up by August and we have gas down to $2 a gallon and you know, ground beef is back down to $3.50 or $4 a pound, I think what you're going to find is people will forget about it. And they'll realize that, you know, whatever, and that could very well happen. It could very easily happen. Not, I wouldn't say easily, but it could very easily be a possibility anyway of happening. So, you know, what would happen? Do you think that people will really remember that by July or August, if prices come back in line? How do you think that how soon do you think that people will basically, you know, forget about it? Or they won't forget about it necessarily, but they'll be eased over by the price drop. What do you think that's going to happen, how do you think people are going to accept that? Or what do you think?
Look, I hear what you're saying about people having short memories, but honestly, I think this time it's different because everyone's literally documenting their grocery hauls on social media and comparing prices. So it's going to be way harder to just sweep under the rug. Plus, like, even if prices drop by August, people are still going to remember being broke in July. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I guess my point is they won't be broke again. I think that people are willing to go through a transient time. You know, there have been times we've paid more for gas. There was times under the Biden administration we paid more for gas. In Obama, there was relatively speaking, it was even more in terms of the cost of living and the value of the dollar. Back then, there was a transient time there where we had gas prices going up in my area up close to $5 a gallon. I remember it very well because we were getting ready to go on a vacation up into Door County, up into Wisconsin. And the price of gas at that time was nearly $5 a gallon. And that was back when we were used to, you know, just under $2 a gallon for gas. That's how ridiculous how it went. People didn't hold that. They remembered it. But when the price dropped back down again, they did not hold that against Obama. He got reelected after that happened in 2012. So I don't know that it's... I think it's significant right now. Now, in my opinion, if prices do not come back down, even if they just stop going up, and they level off where they are, that is not good. That's not acceptable. They have got to go back down to where they were, or I think people will not be. I think people will be fairly forgiving, not necessarily forgetting, but forgiving, if prices go back down. So if beef prices go back down to where they were a year ago, I think that we'll see. I think a forgiving public, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. I don't know. What do you think about that? Go ahead and speak to me. What do you think?
Okay, but that's literally the difference, though. Back then, people weren't posting their gas receipts on every platform getting thousands of likes.
I don't think so.
So the narrative could just fade away easier. But now, everyone's got receipts, literally. And the discourse is never going to die on the internet. So I don't think forgetting is even an option this time around.
And like I said, it's not about forgetting necessarily. It's about forgiving. So it's out there. And it was only a couple of years ago that the Biden administration had the issue. So I don't know. I just have to agree to disagree on that one, in my opinion. But we've got Artie coming up now with the next
call.
Hello
again, sir. China and Boeing.
Hello.
I keep hearing this 200-jet deal out of Beijing summit could balloon to 750 planes. Some folks say it's a real handshake. Others say it's mostly headline noise. Is any of it true?
Yeah, so I did hear about this. I do tend to kind of watch the news with regard to aviation news, whether it's, you know, purchases and buying, you know, crashes, whatever it is, accidents, incidents, the economic news with regarding aviation. I do tend to kind of perk my ear up on those things. This is an interesting thing. Now, I guess they got solid orders and payment for 200 Boeing jets. Now, I don't know whether those are 787s. I don't know what kind of jets they are. I don't know if it's a smattering of a few. Keep in mind, there's only one China airline. There's only one business in China, and that's the Chinese. The CCP runs all of them, basically. They regulate the whole thing. They control the means of production. The airline itself is very, very strict and strong. And, you know, they're basically all one under one umbrella, even though there's China Cargo. There's a couple different China Cargos. There's Tiger Charter. It's still all one company. It's still all run by one major overseer, which is the CCP. Now, as far as them buying, their government buying these airplanes, they're claiming they may buy up to 700. Some of them. That's a huge order. That is a huge order of airplanes. One of the issues that this always brings up is when the foreign carriers start to buy airplanes, they don't have the ability to train pilots the way we do here in this country. And the national pilot demand directly affects the demand here in the United States. I've talked to some pilots here in the country that in the U.S. who think that the pilot shortage is over, you know, and they're only looking, they're very short sighted in some ways. They don't understand that the pilot pool is an international pool now, and any time that you get a large number, I don't know why I can't turn that down. A large number of pilots being hired throughout the international world. Some of these companies will throw a lot of money at foreign pilots. I could probably get hired. Now I don't have much time left on my career. At 65, you have to retire. An American pilot could get hired by an international company, and in the process of doing so, say they went to China. Now the problem with say you got hired by a Chinese airline, the problem with that is you have to live on compound. They take your passport. They do pay you a ridiculous amount of money. They will throw money at you. Some of these guys that are doing this kind of thing that have been done it in the past, they'll make it, you know, $500,000 a year, even just to start. The problem is you live in China. You have to live there on a compound. They basically hold you as a slave there to their company, and it's a great way for somebody who's young and starting out to make a whole bunch of money and sock it all away. Or somebody who's just in a bad shape and they just need to make a bunch of money. However, your lifestyle will be incredibly different. It's a very different way of living. In my opinion, you're basically held hostage by the Chinese government. I would not be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to do it. It's a very different kind of lifestyle to have. Not a necessarily terribly bad lifestyle. I just wouldn't do it. There's no way I could do it. And if they paid me maybe $2 million to do it for a year, I'd probably do it. It would just be, I'd just be biting the bullet and do it for a year. That's all I would do. I wouldn't do it for a career. I wouldn't do it. It's just one of those things where, you're going to do it, make your money, get out of there. You're going to pay exorbitant taxes because you're going to be paying taxes, just a lot of taxes. However, it would be a good gig for a year. For some people, it'd be a great gig for them for certain things. Now, the problem with that is they hire these guys and guys leave. So you have all these pilots out there. Now, if they're going to have 750 airplanes, even 200 airplanes, you're talking about 1,400 pilots just to run those airplanes, keep them flying all the time. That's what you're going to have in order to keep them going. So because you basically have to have seven times the number of airplanes. It takes about seven pilots to keep an airplane running continuously like that. Just because of time off and everything else that they have to have. So it's kind of the extent of keeping it running. Just a lot, and that just draws and basically kind of draws down the pilot pool nationally as well as internet, because guys are going to leave the country to go fly there, and you're going to end up with a shortage again. They're not the only ones buying airplanes right now. This all goes in waves. It always goes in waves. But if they really do put that kind of money into it. Now, China has made some commitments in the past. They've never come through with it. They do not have much of an aviation industry in China. My guess is at some point they will. But they don't have much of one. And they're probably not going to. They're starting to build cars now. They're starting to build electric cars, that kind of thing. They're starting to push into the market there. We'll see how that works out for them. I don't know. But that's just what I'm seeing right now. I think it's a real deal. I think that there will be at least some investment, even if it's only half of that. I believe it's going to have a huge impact on the market here. I'm actually quite shocked they didn't go with, Airbus. However, to some degree, Airbus is European. It's a European industry, and the Chinese and Europeans aren't getting along as well. There are some rifts in the things that are happening there. I think Boeing probably had pulled something out of their hat doing this deal with them, and of course there's the tariffs issue there as well. That Trump is getting some promises from Xi Jinping, and I think that's where it's at right now. That's just my opinion. I don't know. What do you think? After me blabbering on for that. All that time.
I've been looking into this 737 MAX order situation. Yeah. And technically speaking, you're spot on about the pilot supply chain math. If they need roughly 7 pilots per aircraft in active service rotation, pulling even 1,000 Western expats creates real downstream pressure on regional carriers who can't compete with those Chinese salaries. What's interesting is the geopolitical angle you mentioned. Boeing probably sweetened this deal considerably, knowing the Airbus relationship with Europe is fractured right now. And honestly, getting Beijing locked into American aircraft dependency is worth more to Boeing long-term than the upfront sale value.
Well, and that's a very good point. I didn't even cover that. It's the long-term commitment. Once they have 200 airplanes, now they are locked in. You can't just dump those on the market and change them out quickly anyway. That is a good point. So then you have them locked into ongoing service plans and parts, just the actual running of them themselves. You're right on about that. That is very, very true. So we'll see what happens with all that. I this is one of those things where they've made the deal. People are skeptical. We'll have to see what ends up happening. Maybe Skip has some points about that. I don't know. Maybe Skip is the skeptic. We'll see what happens with that. Good points, though. I do appreciate your calling in. So thanks for supposedly calling in as an AI bot.
Well, now hold on there, Kevin. Oh, here we go. Is anyone talking about Kevin Warsh getting confirmed as the new Fed chair and that 8-4 vote at the FOMC? Biggest dissent since 1992 sounds awfully political to me. Got to get your take on this one.
You know, I had not heard about that. The only news report I had actually heard was that he got confirmed. I didn't realize it was an 8-4 vote, and I haven't really always kept up with the Fed chair stuff too much. It's kind of a racket. They typically kind of pick their own. They basically give the president a certain number of people to put in the position, and they kind of it's kind of a cabal. They don't really give us any. You know, they can't just appoint just anybody that position. In other words, it is kind of a good old boy position. So I really haven't paid that much attention to it, just because there's not much we can do about, you know, I can't do it. Well, I can't do much about anything anyway, but it's one of those things where I don't necessarily know that I've really paid that much attention to it. Now, if that history is true, if that's normally a, you know, like maybe one dissent person or need or no dissent whatsoever, then there must be some political hankering going on behind the scenes with this one, because normally the Fed is pretty much lockstep with themselves. They appoint themselves and they look at the, so maybe there's a riff happening, and it's probably, my guess is it probably has something to do with Trump. Probably that there is some dissent, or there's some lack of support for the president. He's very polarizing, and maybe the Fed has become a little bit polarized in their political views as well, and that's kind of reflected now in what's happening with that vote. That's an interesting part of it. I don't know anything about the guy. What do you know about the guy? Do you know anything about the guy himself in terms of what he's qualified to do, or where he comes from, or anything about him? Yeah, that'd be, I guess, the first thing I have to look into. What his background is and what his philosophy is.
Well, now, this is interesting. An 84 vote used to mean everybody was on the same page. So if there's real dissent showing up at the Fed level, that tells you something's shifted in how these institutions are operating. I can't remember a time when the Federal Reserve got this political, but if Trump's pushing different policies and the Fed's not marching in lockstep like they used to, maybe we're seeing the old boy network actually crack for once.
Yeah, that's very possible. The philosophical political bent may be, you know, they're people in finance tend to be a little bit more conservative, and they tend to be a little bit, they tend to lean right a little bit more normally. Now, they're at least in their personal lives. What's interesting about it is when they are in their in public, if they're a public individual, they will tend to lean to what they think to be the what is easy for the, it's just like, I think it's Steyer out in California, who's running for office. He'll come out and say, "Oh, I think billionaires need to pay more tax. I think, you know, I'm a billionaire. We need to pay more tax." Well, you're welcome to pay more. Just go ahead and do it. See, they want to push themselves up there as the, you know, post themselves up into public as one of the good billionaires. They're one of the good billionaires. Don't come and, you know, raid my house. Don't come and, you know, protest my place, because I'm one of the good billionaires. I'm one of the people who want to pay more taxes. I agree. I don't know. Like Pritzker in Illinois, he's a billionaire, multi-billionaire. And yet he supports a party that hates billionaires, that says there shouldn't be any billionaires. It just blows me away that, and of course you got, you know, Cuban and everybody else that come out here. I'm one of the good guys though. I'm a good billionaire. It's all virtue signaling. It's this ability to be accepted by the general public, and a group of people who hate billionaires, because they want to portray them as being the elitists and the people who, you know, that's kind of where that kind of goes all the time. That's, you've probably seen it as much as anybody, but that's kind of where I see it coming from. What do you think about that?
You're hitting on something real there. These guys all talk the talk about taxes and fairness when the cameras are on, but you don't see them actually writing checks or giving up their power, do you? It's the oldest hustle in the book. Position yourself as one of the good ones so nobody comes after you while you keep doing exactly what you were doing before.
Yeah, that's very true. That's... Yeah, what else can you say about that? That's... It is what that's what they do. That's how they operate. It's totally how they operate. And so it's just kind of one of those things. Let's take a call from Elena, our historian. See what she has to say about this. See if she's covered anything that needs to be talked
hello
about.
There, Kevin. Oh, hello. Well, I guess we're back to oil shocks again. Mm. 10 of the last 12 recessions were preceded by a spike in oil prices. That's not a coincidence. That's a pattern. Being a historian, it's just part of my DNA to see Iran 2026 starting to rhyme with 1973 all over again.
Huh. Interesting comment. That's an interesting comment. Actually, the rhymes with... So 10 of the last 12 recessions. This, I think, has... Now, do you happen to know why there were two of them that were not related to oil spikes? I think that this one has the potential to be the third that is not related to a recession. And here's why. There's a whole lot of other things happening economically behind the scenes that are going to pull investment into the country. There's a whole lot of investment coming into the country. There's a mix of other things happening, I guess. I think that the war in Iran, or the military action in Iran, is having a lot to do with the oil spike, the oil, as you call it. And I think it's isolated. This is an isolated thing that's happening with oil right now. Many times the spike in oil prices in the past have been related to other factors that I think have been more permanent. I just doubt. I see that the spike is being more transient. It's a good point, though. I mean, it is a pattern. It's definitely a pattern. I will concede that. But I, at the same time, I have to realize that I think this is one of those different moments because of the political climate, because of the economic climate, the things that are happening worldwide, the realignment that's taking place, I think is part of this as well. You have Venezuela, which is is becoming a totally different player on the world market with regard to oil. You have people pulling. I think it was the UE. Who was it? Somebody pulled out of the OPEC issue has been recently pulled out. So I guess there's a whole lot of other dynamics. I think it's a mix up of things that I think will cause this time to be different. I think it's going to go against the pattern. It may even have the opposite effect. In my opinion, that's just where I'm at with it. Now, again, I'm not a geopolitical expert, but that's just kind of where I'm.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You're absolutely right that we're in uncharted territory here. Yeah. And I think what you're picking up on is that the old oil shock playbook might not apply the same way anymore with all these geopolitical realignments happening simultaneously. Yeah. You mentioned Venezuela and the shifting OPEC dynamics. And historically, that's huge because it used to be that one supply disruption could cascade into a full recession. Yeah. But now we've got so many competing factors. Reshoring, different energy sources coming online, capital flowing in different directions, that the traditional correlation is breaking down. It's kind of like how the 2008 financial crisis didn't follow the old rules either. And that's what makes this moment so tricky to predict.
Yeah, I think studying patterns is good. You know, obviously history, those who don't learn history are doomed to repeat it. I think that's probably something that's... But I think economically patterns are good to watch, good to follow, and good to understand. At the same time, there have to be a lot of other things at play here. I think that are not factored into that. To look at just one thing and say, well, the price spiked, so therefore this is going to happen. All the things that happen around the reason for that spike, or you know what it is that causes that, because a lot of things can cause oil to spike. And I think that in this particular case, I think that there are some other factors causing some of this, and a lot of it, like you said, reshoring and everything else is happening, I think, is causing it. That's kind of how I see it. Now, maybe I'm just hopeful. I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking, you know, hopefully that this is the way it is. Maybe I'm biased. I'm sure I have a bias.
You're hitting on something really important there, the difference between correlation and causation. Because, yeah, oil spikes preceded most recessions, but that doesn't mean the oil spike caused them. It was often just a symptom of the underlying economic stress. What I find fascinating is that this time around, you've got central banks, governments, and markets all much more sophisticated at managing these shocks than they were in 1973 or even 2008. So the transmission mechanism might just be completely different. I think you're right to look at the full picture rather than isolating one variable, because that's where the real story of what comes next actually lives.
Yeah, and that's, I guess that's where we just have to kind of wait and watch how things play out. It's a tough situation, I think, for some people to be in right now with gas prices the way they are. It's very difficult. It makes the cost of living go up ridiculously. At the same time, with a recession, you have you basically have people just stop spending, and that is going to cost. I mean, people have to take money that they would otherwise be spending on, you know, consumer goods, they take that to get by week to fill their tank, so they can pay their bills and keep their job. I think that part of it will have a short term effect and possibly I would call it a micro recession maybe type thing where there's just a lack of spending. But you know, a whole lot of things could happen here. We're at a tipping point, I think, in some ways, a teetering point maybe, of things that can happen. That's good points. I think that was all good from everybody necessarily. Any one of those callers I could have probably kept a conversation going with. If I would have had a little more information, I could have probably been a little bit better at discussing some things with them. But it's all that stuff was kind of off my beaten path, kind of outside my scope to some degree. I would not have probably talked about those subjects had it not been for the callers. So this is kind of good because it does spawn and spur a little bit more of a conversation about some deeper issues, which I think is very helpful to have. So that's kind of interesting show content thing coming up. Now we got this. I got a couple things to play here. Play another bumper, and we're going to be right back after this.
Five, seven, four. But wait, there's more. 651, we're almost done. 76 and 85, text that number, it's alive. Text that number, call that number, don't be a loser.
Yeah, we've got, you can call the number, call 574, whatever it is. I don't know what it is. It's in there somewhere. I don't know. Yeah, I see we've got no documents there. Just give me a call. Whatever you think about that. Where'd it go? Wait, what just happened? I didn't just lose my call. Oh, there it is. Yeah, we got plenty of things happening with all that. So if you could, next Monday, we'll have a normal show on Monday morning. Hopefully, sometime next week, this caller app should be going online, hopefully by Wednesday. That's the plan. However, it could be Thursday or Friday, depending on how things end up shaping up. But at some point next week, this caller app will be online. It will be up and running and available for people to actually sign on to and get a subscription to this whole service and figure out what. Now there's going to be a lot of other plugins and a lot of other options that I haven't even explored yet with this thing, but there's a lot of things that are going to be plugged into this thing that we'll be exploring over the next. And one of them is going to be one of the things is where all these people, all four people, will be on a panel and we'll be having an open discussion between all four of us or all five of us or whatever it is, two or three of us at a time. So we'll have multiple agents in the room, kind of like a small focus group type thing. Another thing that it's going to have is an ability to have an interview, historical interview with maybe a historical person, King Charles, whatever it is, Prince Edward in a can. We'll talk about all those kinds of things. Lots of other ways to talk to historical figures. I have to be kind of careful with some of that because some of that is copyrighted. However, if a person it's been more than 100 years, more than so many years, I think it's 50 years or 100 years, or after the person passes or whatever it is, so many years after the person passes, you can do those kinds of things. without any permissions or anything. But there are people that some people you have to get permissions to do that with, unless there's some kind of disclaimer with involved. That's where it gets all kind of hokey pokey. So I just want to thank you for listening to the show today. Thank you for listening to the show this week. The way things have been going. Again, feel free to call, text the show, get at the hotline, and let me know what you think. We'll also be introducing some new things next week as well. We've got Mishmash Monday, but Topical Tuesday, Wishy Washy Wednesday, and then Theological Thursday and Financial Friday. That's what's going to be happening. So just stay in tune, stay in touch. Thanks for listening. And in the meantime, God bless. Have a great weekend. Shabbat Shalom. See ya.